you, and you may be seated. As has already been mentioned, this is Transfiguration Sunday as we come to the end of Epiphany and get ready to begin on Lent. We come to the Sunday we celebrate every year. It's in the church calendar, Transfiguration Sunday. I want to share a brief video clip. This is the educational portion of the sermon. It's not quite 2 minutes long, but it'll give you some background on what's sometimes called the Feast of Tabernacles or Festival of Booths. It's a Jewish tradition that goes way back, and it gets referred to during the scripture. There's reference to it, and I think it gives some context that I'll talk about later. But let's watch this clip.
High security measures were taken in Jerusalem during the Feast of Sukkot, which ended on October 5th. Also known as Feast of Booths or Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot is one of three pilgrimage festivals that are linked to a pilgrimage. In ancient times, people used to visit the temple in Jerusalem to offer sacrificial gifts. This is a particularly joyful feast. It combines religious themes and agricultural elements. Sukkot originates in the Torah, and it commemorates the booths in which the Israelites lived during their life in the desert after the Exodus from Egypt. The hut or booth is a temporary home, and it is seen in all cities in Israel, in homes and in shopping malls. As per tradition, the roof is made from tree branches, like palm fronds, through which one must be able to see the sky while maintaining a prevailing shadow effect inside the booth. The first and last days are particularly festive, but it is on a special morning during this week that the blessing of the rabbis of Israel takes place. This is a significant experience. Every corner giving access to the wall is filled with people. Everyone is there to receive the blessing. As established by the Torah, there were four types of trees used in the ritual blessings on each day of the festivities: palm fronds, willow, myrtle, and cedar. A simple explanation for this is that the four plant species represent the variety of characteristics of men and nature, which allow each man and each tree to possess their own qualities. For this reason, we must thank God. Sukkot is also known as Harvest Festival, celebrated in autumn after the summer harvest and before the planting of winter crops. One of the main prayer themes is the rain. The farmers thank God for the harvest and they pray to have a year of rain.
Okay, so the Festival of Booths, or Feast of Tabernacles, whatever you want to call it, goes all the way back to the Torah. You know, it's talked about there, and it's been celebrated by the Jewish people for all those years. And while not exactly the same, we can think of our Thanksgiving, you know, because there was a lot of gratitude and thankfulness for God being with them through the desert, and as they used to camp and have those tents. And so they, you know, kind of recreate that when there's some specifics around that, and you heard about letting the light in and all that. And so that's an important context to have and to remember. And as I say, we'll refer to it in a little bit. But I did want to take just a second to talk about our team, our Honduras team, because we had a group that got in about 8:30 last night, and we had a group that got in about midnight last night. And we've got a number of people that have been here all morning. We had some folks at the 9:30 service as well. If you were on the Honduras team, would you stand up for just a second so we can see you? And Teresa probably would like me to take off that picture of you at the end. But we'll stand up. We had 20 on the team this year, and that's the largest we've had in a number of years. And it was a great team. We did some great work, and Josh has already said, the last Sunday of March, we've got some wonderful testimony to share about God's work in Honduras and how we got to be a part of it all. I understand y'all had some rain while I was gone. Is that true? Yeah, okay, I heard that. It's hard for us to imagine, you know, when you're in a completely different context where it's 100 degrees And seriously, every day, and not even a chance of rain. One day it got kind of cloudy for a minute, and then it all went away. So it's kind of hard, but you know, one of the things about coming back after being on a trip like that, and you can relate to this if you've been on a mission trip, or even like sometimes on a vacation or something where you've sort of like disengaged from the place that you've been in, and then you've got to re-engage. And that sort of re-engaging sometimes takes a bit. And even though most people in our group were pretty much disconnected from internet and news and all that. I was in, news and all that I didn't pay attention to. I did have my phone with me, and I do have an international plan, and because we had some needs that were going on with Mike and then later on Larry and some congregational things I wanted to make sure that I was abreast of. But because of that, I got some text from people at home to their loved ones that were on the trip. And so I got this text from Julianne Yoder that said, it's been raining so much, the emergency grave is filled with water. Now, that is a weird text to get. I'm not going to lie. And so that's a picture of it. We see how much rain you had, and those are the emergency graves they have at the Yoder house because they live on a farm, and apparently sometimes animals die and have to be buried. But anyway, I thought that was kind of funny too. I had no idea what an emergency grave was. But, you know, we find ourselves reconnecting, trying to get back, getting our calendars out, see what's going on. And I want to say that in another aspect of what we're doing here this morning with this particular day of the year, this end of Epiphany, Transfiguration Sunday, is sort of reconnecting with a different kind of calendar, with a different kind of rhythm. And it's probably to your detriment that I'm not any more liturgical than I am. I do pay attention to the lectionary and to the liturgical seasons, and I do think we celebrate them, particularly when we get into what I call the high holy seasons, which we're embarking on this week. There is this rhythm that is different than the rest of our lives in the church calendar, in the Christian year. And when we get in tune with that, I think we are better served, and it leads us more into a place of holiness as we encounter God. And so, you know, here's a kind of overview of that calendar. It actually, the end of the year is Christ the King Sunday, right around Thanksgiving time usually. Then we have Advent, and then we celebrate the birth, and then we go right into Epiphany, and then from Epiphany, Lent, and Easter, and so on. And so, you know, as we engage and sort of re-engage, it's important. Now, I was talking to somebody on the trip about just how it is to, you know, he's a leader in his organization, as I am kind of in mine, and that, like, so much of what we as leaders, and you, everyone does, is we find ourselves sort of in a state of reacting more than acting sometimes. That makes sense? It's just always crisis and emergency, and there's always things right before us. And it's really no way to live your life to always just only be reacting, you know, to reacting to what this emergency or that complaint or whatever it is. And the Christian calendar, looking at and getting into the rhythm of the Christian year, I think can pull us back into those Kairos moments, those God moments, you know, that can bring us into the holy. And so that is Transfiguration here on the last Sunday. I want to read through the text and then make a few comments that hopefully will be helpful to you as we move now from Epiphany into Lent. And so here's this text. It's from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 17. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. Now, we've done this before. After 6 days, we just can't let that lie. Context matters. After 6 days from what? What do you mean after 6 days? And particularly in Matthew, the way that Matthew tells the story, there's something going on here. And if you back up and you look, you find that just before that, Jesus has taken his disciples to a place called Caesarea Philippi. And I know that many of you have been to Israel, have been there. It was a very pagan place at the time where they worshiped pagan gods. It's a really strange place for Jesus to take the disciples to reveal who he is. But in the Epiphany, you know, in the Epiphany of Christ, we're seeing that more and more through those texts. And so just before this, 6 days before, Jesus had been at Caesarea Philippi, and he said, you know, who are people saying that I am? You're hearing the people. What are they saying about our ministry? Who are they saying that I am? And they said, well, some people think that you're Moses. Some people think that you're Elijah. Some people say that you're John the Baptist back from the dead. And remember, John the Baptist had been beheaded just before this, too. And so he asked the question, well, who do you say that I am? And Peter said, what? You are the Messiah. You are the Christ. Peter, and so Jesus, you know, gave him the keys to the kingdom and that. So that is a, you know, significant martyr. Peter got it right. The revelation, you know, Epiphany is about light, but it's also about revelation of understanding deeper who Christ is. And so Peter gets it. And so James and John, the brother of James, and they led him up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. This incredible, mystical miracle that we really don't understand, but it's, you know, it's there in scriptures, and we ponder it in the holiness of God that is involved there. And then just there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. And if I wanted to drill down into a lot of details, I could talk to you about how Moses, when he went up to get the Ten Commandments, he was up there for 6 days. And so 6 days later, I mean, they're connecting these mountains there, and with Elijah as well. But you know, these details matter, particularly in how Matthew tells the gospel story. And so Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And that's why I played the video. And I know you probably, a lot of you probably knew about that or have had references, studied that before. But without it, it's kind of a random thing to say. You know, it's good to be here. Let's build three tents. You know, what is it? My guess is that the because of how Peter is, that maybe the Feast of Tabernacles had not been too far away. It had been maybe a week or two away. Maybe that. It's not in the gospel there, and I'm reading between the lines. But I just know how I am, and I know how Peter is. It's whatever the last thing was, we filter everything through that. This is like this, you know. And so Peter, you know, has this great adventure, as he does repeatedly, in missing the point. And we, like Peter, are often too quick to try to assign meaning before we learn from the experience. To just wait and see, and maybe it's just to be the holy place that it was. You don't have to necessarily come with, like, connecting the dots and interpreting, and particularly not right in that moment. But Peter, the way that he is, Peter, you know, reminds me, any of you are teachers, you know the student that's always got his hands up first. Y'all don't have any kids like that, do you? Their hand up, yes. Have you ever seen their kid? I bet you were like that, Melissa. I bet you were kind of a hand up first. Yeah. And this, I mean, we love those kids. They're delightful kids. They want to learn. They care. They're excited. And that's Peter. Before, you know, he even really has had time to consider, his hands up. Let's build, you know, let's build these tabernacles. Let's build these tents. And what's interesting is that he gets interrupted by God. How many of you have been interrupted by God? Yeah. You know, God interrupts us, but, you know, it's often in quiet ways. But this is, I mean, how many of you have been literally interrupted by God's voice speaking? That's what happens, you know. As I love the way the text words it there. While he was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. Face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. In Matthew's Gospel, particularly, as you go through, touch is often, I think every time, associated with healing. He touches them. He says, get up, don't be afraid. And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. As they were going down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. And so there is a connection. There's a connection here from this event. As they're coming down from the mountain, mountaintop experience with the resurrection. And so going back to Epiphany, you know, Epiphany is this season right after Christmas, and it is a season of light. As I said, it's a time when the revelation of Jesus is. If we'd done the lectionary text every week, we would have encountered text where people had a new growing awareness of who Jesus was, like Caesarea Philippi. There is a beginning to Epiphany, and it's always the same event, just like the Transfiguration is always the bookend on the other side. And it is the baptism of Jesus. The first Sunday of Epiphany is the baptism of Jesus. The last Sunday in Epiphany before we go into Lent is the Transfiguration. Did you notice anything that was similar in those two stories? Yes, that you have the right answer. Yes. In Matthew, it's the same thing. It's in Matthew. At that moment, this is in Matthew's gospel, when heaven was open and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him, and a voice from heaven said, this is my Son whom I love, with him I am well pleased. At the Transfiguration, this is my Son whom I love. Listen to him. So it's the same thing, and you get this idea. Sometimes I see some of you with your children or your grandchildren, you know, and I'll say, man, that is a good-looking boy. Or I'll say, man, now what a beautiful little girl. And I can see the pride just beaming from your faces. You know that feeling, right? And it's like that with this to me. When God, you know, the Abba Father is looking down. And, you know, God came in the person of Jesus Christ, but then there's also this relationship in the Trinity with the Father and the Son, and the Father is looking down and in these moments has to break in, this is my Son with whom I will please, in those moments, in those holy moments, to take up that, you know, entering into human existence to let us know, it's my Son whom I love, listen to him. These bookends. And so it is that we come to the end of Epiphany, and now we're moving on to something else, and it's Lent. And so we'll be coming down from the mountain now. We'll be coming down from the mountain, and those of us who have been on this trip know what it's like to come down the mountain. So there's something about those of you who have been on a spiritual retreat, maybe like Walk to Emmaus, or you've been on a mission trip, or any of those things, you know that you don't want to leave. But it's time to come down. And so Epiphany, with all its majesty, yet Jesus is calling us down into the valley. And the conversation will change. And there'll be much more talk about the cross. Jesus saying to his disciples, take up your cross and follow me. If you want to follow after me, there's a cross involved. And so we enter now, leaving from this time of light, into a place where there are shadows and there is darkness, because the light of Christ needs to shine there as well. And so in the season of Lent, we often address those things. Sometimes people will give up things or add things for Lent. You know, that's kind of a practice. We as a church are beginning Wednesday night, and we'll have some on Sundays and other places, but we have these calendars that have activities and actions and things to read for 40 days during the time of Lent. And we were going to do three different ones, one for children, one for teenagers, one for adults. But then we realized, you know, we can all do the same one. And even though they're in some way you would say designed for children, man, adults can do this stuff. If adults do this stuff, we would all be better off. But it's all focusing on the theme of hope. You know, hope is something that we state a lot. But there's a way in which we look, discover what hope is and how we can bring that to others and experience it ourselves. And what we're hoping is through the season of Lent that this will guide you. I mean, you may have other things that you want to do. You may be called to fast. You may be called to give up something else. But if we as a congregation can focus on this and the 40 days of hope, and as we do, we want to look for ways of sharing those stories and ways, and we'll have some, you know, very specific ways in which we can do that. We'd love to hear those stories. We'd love for you to, you know, hashtag it and put it on Facebook so we can talk about it and celebrate it together. Because if you've done the math, you know, there's more than 40 days between now and Easter. It's because that on Sundays during Lent, we celebrate them all as little Easters. And so we want to come back as we go down from the mountain, as we go into the darkness, as we go through these days, that we can come back and celebrate how God is working in our lives, how God is working in our families, how God is working in our communities as we take up our cross and follow him. There's this other section to it as well. Remember, Jesus said, don't tell anybody until after I am been raised from the dead. And there's a symbolism in that too, that not only is it Epiphany to Lent, but it is also Lent to Easter. And it will not be complete until we have Easter. Jesus goes over to these disciples that have their heads on the ground, puts their hands on him, touches them, which is a healing. And then the scripture says he raises them up. You know, that image, this foreshadowing of the resurrection. And so as we, as individuals, or maybe as people you encounter, as we go with the grace, as we go offering the touch and hope of Jesus, may we also be raised up. May we help others to be raised up. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.